Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's Louisiana Eats, we're taking a meander up the Mississippi, all the way to Natchez, where the 21st century is shaking up the 300-year-old antebellum burg. While overnighting at Dunleaf Plantation, we'll examine the Natchez culture of then and now. First off, we'll meet the amazing visionary Dub Rogers, who introduced third-wave coffee there and went on to found one of the cutting-edge new blues clubs of Mississippi. Then, we'll visit Natchez Brewing Company to meet the dynamic team who were the first to legally brew beer in Natchez since Prohibition. And there's more than beer brewing in Natchez. Father and son team, Doug and Jean-Luc Charbonneau, have created the first distillery in Natchez, where they're making an award-winning rum using Louisiana sugarcane from just across the Mississippi River. There's farmers markets to visit and plantations to tour, all on this week's Louisiana Eats. Just across the Louisiana state line, located on a high bluff overlooking the Mississippi River, is Natchez, Mississippi, a southern town with its own unique history, charm, and style. Founded in 1716, the River City is home to an impressive cluster of antebellum mansions and national landmarks. Between its stunning architecture and show of southern hospitality, it's easy to feel as though you've stepped back in time. When the Louisiana Eats crew arrived in Natchez, we were hosted at Dunleaf Historic Inn, the jewel of the river town's antebellum homes. Dunleaf was built in the Greek Revival style, with enormous columns on all four sides, chandeliered rooms, wraparound porches, and its very own tour guide.
My name's Terry Travato. I'm the historian and mansion host at Dunleaf Historic Inn. There's a lot of history here, and it's just wonderful to share with people like you. Basically, the house was built in 1856.
Terry gave us a tour of the well-preserved mansion, explaining the way of life of its 19th century residents and how every room displayed the extravagance found in many homes in antebellum Natchez.
One of the most interesting things in this entire house is the wallpaper. This wallpaper was produced by the Zubert Company in Rixheim, France, using an engraved wooden block hand printing technique. It was all printed by hand using engraved blocks of wood. It took over 2,000 individual engraved blocks of wood to produce the 31 panels of this wallpaper. And there's a little plaque over here next to the door jamb that tells us after they produce it for the first time, they entitle it a Laison in French. Now, the French refer to this as a panoramique. It is telling us some kind of a story. It is showing us something. And what this wallpaper is depicting for us are the zones, regions, climates of the earth. Tropical, temperate, Arctic, and arid. There is a Zubert wallpaper in the White House called Scenes of North America. Jackie Kennedy put it there when she was first lady. It's in a reception room. It took 1,575 wooden blocks to create Scenes of North America. It took 2,050 to create Laison. We have done a lot of research on how rare a complete set of Laison is like this one. And in our opinion, there are probably no more than 5 to 10 complete surviving sets of Lazon left in the world. We have an antiques forum here every year. 2 years ago, one of the guys at the antiques forum was a Zubair wallpaper guru. And he heard this was in this house. So they bring him out here and give him to me. And I walk him in here and he just stares at it. And his comment is, "I've only seen this in books. I have never seen it on a wall anyplace."
Wow.
So the wallpaper is a big deal, and we're thrilled to have it here at Dunleaf.
Terry Trovato, historian and mansion host at Dunleaf Historic Inn. In 1932, the ladies of the Natchez Garden Club created the Spring Pilgrimage. Opening their private homes to visitors, they initiated the first ever tour of its kind in the nation and simultaneously sparked a passionate interest in historic preservation. Through their efforts, over 30 antebellum mansions have been preserved, with a dozen of them designated National Historic Landmarks. Today, the financial impact of the spring and now fall pilgrimage are vital elements of the Natchez economy. We had the honor of meeting some of the Garden Club's most stalwart members, whose participation reaches back into the 1940s, and learned their unique perspective of their beloved Natchez and its legendary pilgrimage.
My name is Betty Jenkins, and I've been a member of the Pilgrimage Garden Club since 1949.
My name is Regina Charbonneau, and I've known Miss Betty Jenkins and Miss Marie Perkins forever, and these ladies my whole life growing up in Natchez. And I've always said that I have idols. They're such strong, dynamic women.
Well, as soon as you got married, you expected to join a garden club, you know. And so we had two back at that time, and my mother belonged to one, and I joined another one because most of my friends were in the Pilgrimage Garden Club.
I mean, hospitality here is just something very genuine that's passed down from generation to generation. Betty's daughter Stella has opened her house, and opening your home is just kind of a rite of passage. It was just expected, and that's what you do. And then people ask me about, you know, why would you take on the presidency? I said my number was up, you know. you can't hide.
She did it.
Yes. Watch out, Marie.
Yeah, your turn. No, honey, I'm too old for that. That's too much responsibility.
Our garden club owns Longwood, the most visited house in Natchez, just beautiful, gorgeous home. We own Stanton Hall, and we have the Carriage House Restaurant. And then it's our job to preserve these properties and keep them going. We have a multi-million dollar business, so it's something you don't take lightly. The houses during Spring Pilgrimage are our homes that we have raised our families in, that we live in. And I think that's what's so special about Natchez. People say to me all the time when they're touring, "I can't believe you just let all of these strangers walk through your house." And I said, in Natchez, we don't consider anybody a stranger. You know, we open our houses, we look forward to it.
It brings money to Natchez. It brings people to Natchez. And they spend their money here, and the city needs the money. So, I mean, but they love what they see, and they love what they do.
Well, I dress up.
We all do.
Put on my hoop skirt during pilgrimage. I don't know, I put it on and stand on the front porch to greet everyone. And they get a little heavy about 2 or 3 hours.
I was going to say, really heavy.
Drop that hoop.
My house was built by a couple named Pierce and Cornelia Connolly, and she ended up finding an order of nuns. It's a fascinating story. And I actually have someone dressed as Cornelia, and she tells her story in first person. And I think Eugenie Cates at her house, she has someone portraying the first governor of Mississippi and some different characters. So we always say each tour is as individual as the owner of the house. Also during pilgrimage, we have the Tableau, which is 100% volunteer. And that's been going on for how many years? I don't
just
even...
Just about as long
as Pilgrimage.
When Sally Ballard was a page, it's been going on that long.
Well,
and she's 90.
Well, it's vignettes and the history of Natchez. And the most precious part of Tableau are all the little tiny ones and three-year-olds in their period costumes doing the maypole. Well, it's like lining up puppies. You know, you line them up and they all go a different way. And people are charmed from the get-go. And our teenagers do beautiful dances, the soiree. And for the longest time, it just dealt with kind of before the war. But a couple of years ago, Greg Iles, he's a New York Times bestselling author, decided to help us to tell the whole story. And you know the struggles Mississippi has gone through with the controversy of the flag. And we have a complicated history, but we've never hidden from our history. History is best presented, being truthful about it, whether it's good or bad in people's eyes. And we've never shied away from the pride we feel for these homes and antiques. And we also acknowledge that these houses were built by slaves. So Greg did a really nice job of incorporating the whole history of Natchez. Like he said, he made a really good point. If you ever read Gone with the Wind, the first 20 minutes were the picnics and the beauty, but the Civil War was really a sad thing. And so he's tried to incorporate the history. And then we went from, you know, the Tableau being all happy to then, you know, then you incorporate slavery. And the ending was a little, you know, people were a little sad. And now we're trying, Greg's trying to come up with music of, you know, a more uplifting ending. And it's a work in progress. Everything we've done, our club is 80 years old, we're a work in progress. So we continue to change, we continue to meet the needs of our visitors, whether it's with food or lodging or entertainment, history, the way they want history interpreted. We listen to our visitors and we continue to please them.
At 300 years old, history and innovation are merging in Natchez, making it more than just a tourist town, but also a place where younger generations are beginning to feel at home, and baby boomers who made their fortunes elsewhere are returning to make their mark on the historic town. On our first morning in Natchez, the Louisiana Eats crew headed over to Smoot's Grocery, a wooden building overlooking the riverwalk along the bluff. Greeting us at the door with a cup of coffee in his hand was Dub Rogers.
My name is Dub Rogers, and I'm the proprietor of Smoot's Grocery. My friends call me Pappy Smoot.
After spending most of his life living in New York and California, Natchez-born Dub has returned home and is now shaking things up with a number of investments. We spoke with him about his current projects, including how he came to own and operate Smoot's Grocery. What is Smoot's Grocery, and what was it before?
Well, Smoot's Grocery is just that. It was the corner grocery store in this little part of town, which was very industrial and working class, so it had a lot of small dwellings where a lot of people lived and worked in the neighborhood, and it was the place to come to buy your moon pies and milk, beer, and cigarettes.
This dates back to when? What period of Natchez's history are we talking about?
Beginning in 1939, as far as I could tell. But there is a story that I must tell, whether it's true or not, but when George Smoot, the proprietor of this place, was living here, he was hired to clear this lot. This lot at one time had another building on it, and in doing so, he found some Spanish gold doubloons. So from what I understand, he went to the owner of the property and offered to buy it from him or in exchange for these gold doubloons. So and he did. So he acquired the property and then commenced to build this corner grocery store, and where him and his family ran this thing until I think the late 70s or the 1980.
And how did it all come to an end in 1980?
It came with the passing of George Smoot. Then the place sat vacant, idle for about 40 years.
40 years?
40 years, yeah. So there were trees growing out of this when we, you know, started working.
How did you come to resurrect it?
Well, it came about because I moved back here from New York and from California. I lived in New York for 30 years and decided to come back to Natchez. In doing so, I met a really lovely woman and sort of decided if I was going to stay here, I had to do something. So because I had a really hard time, in fact, impossible time finding a nice cup of espresso, I decided to go into the coffee business. So I started a small coffee roasting company called Steampunk Coffee Roasters, which is next door. So people started discovering us, primarily travelers from out of town, a lot of Europeans, Australians, people from all over the United States, North America. And they would say, wow, this is a great little place, blah, 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 blah. We're spending the night, we're on our way from New Orleans to Clarksdale or to Memphis, Nashville, wherever they're going on their music junket. And they would say, we want to hear some live music. We want to hear some blues. Is there any place happening in town? So usually there was nothing going on. Every now and then somebody would come and play, but there wasn't anything regular where people were doing, you know, live performance regular, like at Tipitina's or the Maple Leaf or Preservation Hall. So from my experiences with those establishments, I was thinking, this, people are asking for this. People want it. So I was compelled to do something about it.
You grew up here then?
I grew up very young age, and I would come back for holidays, but I actually grew up in Texas. So, but this was my home. It's on my birth certificate, Natchez, Mississippi, and I always fantasize about coming back here and finding a little building, restoring it, and hanging my shingle, and just being a little old man shopkeeper. And but I did. I came back, and I followed through on my dreams. And it's been a really great ride. We've had live music three nights a week since then.
Who comes here that brings your crowds?
Wow.
Who's playing? How are you selecting your musicians, and what's happening here?
Well, I have great help with some people in the music industry that are basically music talent headhunters. And they go out and listen to these groups and find them. And plus, a lot of the people that we have here are headliners in the blues world and the music world. The rest is fun for me. I like to go out and you know, hunt for talent, go to New Orleans and hit 10 music clubs in one night and just get a feeling of their vibe, the energy, and then connect with the people that way. So anyway, this was from 1939 until now a corner grocery store. But on Saturday nights, it became a juke joint. And on Sunday, they were closed because, of course, everyone goes to church.
And what would a juke joint have been like back then? What do you imagine was happening in here?
I think a juke joint would have been a very free-flowing happening. It would have been a gathering of people after working all week. Let's come in and have a few beers. They would bring in their musical instruments or harmonica or maybe nothing, and they would sing and dance and drink beer and snack on food and maybe play cards or dominoes and fight and, you know, trying to find new girlfriends, whatever you do, have fun and just relax and finish off the week.
That's great. Do you serve food here?
We don't serve food here on a regular basis. I have a food truck.
I
have a food truck.
How many different
so
businesses do you have now in Natchez Town?
I have, four different businesses right now. One is the coffee company. Two is Smoot's Grocery. Then we have a food truck. And then the other thing, which is a hobby job, is reclaiming building materials.
So what about the food truck?
Well, the food truck just came out because I love food truck culture. I like being on the road and on the go and being spontaneous and not having it so brick and mortar and serious. And the food truck was originally went about it was a snowball truck. So I converted to this white snowball truck to this black steampunk super SWAT truck. So it's like flat black, like a hot rod. We set it up as a coffee truck with espresso, and everything we do at our coffee house, we did in the truck.
Everybody I speak with here, many, many of them have gone away, many for like 30 years, and they come back, and the theme I keep hearing is that everything's the same. Everything's the same. But it seems like maybe you're the dilettante who's changing things.
Yeah, I'm a catalyst for change. If I can change it, if it can be changed, I can change it. So, and we have other projects we're working on now. It may be a little premature to talk about them right now, but major project. And it's going to be really fun. Mississippi needs a lot of help right now. And if it's not people like me, and a lot of people like me, then it's going to be a sorry state for the end of time. But I see a real bright spot for Mississippi. I think it's a jewel and a quirky place. And I think if people would just, you know, move on and bring this modern Mississippi thing on, I think it's going to be great for everyone.
So in your experience now that you are sort of leading this enormous change in many, many ways, how is the old guard reacting?
The people that that come in, it is the entire spectrum from families with young people, a lot of the elderly people have been around for a long time. They come in and they're just, you know, their eyes are really big when they come in. A lot of the young millennials in this culture of, a set group of people that are sort of, you know, wavering between staying and going. And I've heard a lot of times that, Dub, you know, we stayed in Natchez because of what you're doing, because you have brought what we want, what we need to like sustain us to be here. And if it wouldn't been for you, we would have been gone a long time ago. And a lot of people say, hey, you're a good reason to come back, because we see you're doing something like this. You've come here and made a business like this with people probably would not do, because they couldn't. And I did it because I didn't care if it was going to make it or not. I just knew that this is what I was going to do.
Well, I'm really thrilled to learn about the exciting new world of Natchez, Mississippi. You know,
we've
heard the antebellum story. I'm really thrilled to hear the new story. It's very great.
It's still being written right now. So
it's wonderful.
The script's being written.
When we come back from a short break, our tour of the new Natchez continues. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and by Ralph's on the Park, where you can sip and savor Chef Chip Flanagan's globally influenced New Orleans cuisine, overlooking the lush foliage and towering oaks of City Park. Lunch, dinner, Sunday brunch, and private events at 900 City Park Avenue in New Orleans, Mid-City. Our next stop in Natchez was, of course, the Farmers Market. The bustling indoor market is open Tuesday through Saturday, stocked with fruits and vegetables grown by Mississippi farmers and backyard gardeners alike. While we were there, a couple of the regulars popped in to deliver their fresh produce.
My name is Barry Tyson, and I own a blueberry farm in Berrytown, Mississippi, which is a small community outside of Meadville. Well, our average crop has never been fully harvested. We have a lot that go to waste. Our biggest market is this farmer's market here, and every Tuesday we deliver a fresh set of berries and then allow them to mark down the ones that have been here for the week. I wish there was more of them, to be honest with you, more places like this. Because you don't have to stay here, you just drop it off, they take a small cut, and you move on.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's really good.
My name is Dennis McDaniel. McDaniel Produce, and this is my wife Virginia and my son Andy.
Lucky Andy, he's working too hard to talk with us.
He's not used to it. We're on Highway 33, 6 miles south of Roxy.
It's Franklin County.
Have you all been farmers long? How have you come to
We've raised gardens all my life.
So you were raising food to eat personally in your family.
We decided we'd try to plant a little more and see if we could sell them. We grow a variety of stuff, squash, cucumbers, okra, peas, tomatoes mainly.
Watermelons. Cantaloupes.
Potatoes.
Snap beans.
How many generations has your family been feeding themselves from the garden?
Forever, I guess, from whenever they started. We did, my dad did, my grandparents did, and I'm sure their parents did. Years ago, we relied on the garden for a lot of food, you know. I'd hear my grandfather talk, they'd go buy sugar and flour and that sort of stuff, and the rest of it was grown.
My name is Helen Brooks. I'm the marketing coordinator. I take care of the day-to-day operation of the farmer's market. Alcorn State University Cooperative Extension Program, if you're familiar with that, that's an outreach component of the university, which is a service component of the university, where we go out and work with our farmers and vendors in four different areas, agriculture, family and consumer science, 4-H, and CRD. And I'm in agriculture. And for years, our farmers, they've been talking about they could grow it, but they had no place to bring it to sell it. We let them know. Our customers, we listen to them, and they let us know what they want, how they want it, the size, the color. And if they're not happy with it, grant you, they would tell us. So that's our feedback as far as making the farmers market the best we can. And on an annual basis, I pull all my growers and vendors together, and I talk to them about what's expected from the state, as far as fresh produce, added value. I go to bat for my farmers because I know what they do and they have a passion for it.
Marketing coordinator Helen Brooks and farmers of the Natchez Farmers Market.
I'm Regina Charbonneau, and this is my restaurant, King's Tavern in Natchez.
Natchez native Chef Regina Charbonneau is known for her contemporary Southern cuisine and a string of successful San Francisco restaurants. In 2000, Regina moved home to raise her two sons, and since has been busy running a bed and breakfast, acting as the culinary director of the American Queen Steamboat Company, and writing several cookbooks. Now, Regina has opened a new restaurant. I had to know why, on top of everything else on her plate, including currently serving as president of the Natchez Garden Club, she felt compelled to start the new business.
Well, King's Tavern, I didn't think that I needed a restaurant. I didn't really want to open my fifth restaurant at 60 years old. But I felt Natchez needed this restaurant. I love my town. I love Natchez. But one of the things that I would hear a lot from our visitors was, I love it and the food is great around town, but God, we just need something healthy. We just want something fresh. And the South is about farm to table. I mean, you and I can go way back. We can talk about this and slow food. And my husband, Doug, he and my son wanted to do a rum distillery. And one day he said, get in the car and I'm going to show you I found the perfect location. And so there was the turn of the century old grocery store on the corner, But this fabulous 1789 cool building. And I have the curse of vision. I walked in, and within 5 minutes, I'm going, I heard the voices, we need something healthy. I saw the architecture of this building, and I'm going, oh my God, I can just see it. I'm going to put in craft cocktails, the rum distillery on the corner, fresh salads, white bean bruschetta, wood-fired pizza. And this is kind of funny, the wood-fired oven that we have here, you know, my house is on tour for pilgrimage, and at the end of pilgrimage, everybody gets a little check, you know, and it helps. You can put it towards some project around your house. Well, most people are like doing new shutters or something. I ordered a wood-fired oven from California. Doug said, you can spend your pilgrimage money and get a wood-fired oven.
And how is the town and the visitors responded?
Oh, gosh. It was a great week. You know, our business doubled the past 2.5 weeks. It was great. But we were also filling a need that they had for, you know, a fun place that felt like they could congregate and good cocktails and good food. So, yeah, it's doing well. People are very appreciative.
Then we went next door to tour Charbonneau Distillery. There, we met Doug and Jean-Luc Charbonneau, who just happened to be Regina's husband and son.
This is an amazing thing to find a rum distillery in Natchez, Mississippi. Doug, what possessed you to do this?
It was just a dream that my wife and I had. We enjoy old age rums after having spent time in the islands. And as my children got older and my oldest son Jean-Luc and I started talking about it, we just decided to do it together. Other people are doing it here down in the south using a sugar cane that's grown in Louisiana and Mississippi, and we decided to do it also.
There is no more restrictive state in the union when it comes to alcohol rules than Mississippi. How difficult is it to get the licensing to have a distillery?
That's true, but the good news for us in Mississippi is they weren't burdened with any history. And when we went to get our state license, they told us, as they had told Cathead 3 years prior, go get your federal license, bring us that license, we'll give you a state license. Federal license is, for everyone, the same. Paperwork, paperwork, paperwork. Background check, FBI, IRS check. For anybody who's involved in the business, in this case, my son and I, which is simple because it's a short list of people. We know our history. So to get the federal license takes anywhere from 50 to 180 days. We got ours in, I think, 57 days, so we were quite fast. But I filled out all the paperwork myself and dealt with it all. I didn't put a middleman in between. I tried to make sure that we were answering the questions. And it moved right along, and once we received the federal license, 3 weeks later, we had our state license.
Jean-Luc, how did you learn how to distill rum?
A bunch of online research, and then a week-long class in South Carolina on how to operate a still without blowing ourselves up, and that was pretty much it. We use a 150-gallon single-column four-plate still by Artisan Still Design. So we start off in a fermentation tank. We have a 300-gallon fermentation tank. And we'll put 450 pounds total combined weight, sugar and molasses, in a nice little proprietary blend we've come up with. Then we'll start adding 120-degree water and stirring with a canoe paddle till all the sugar and molasses is dissolved. Then we'll switch over to about 100-degree water and fill the tank up. Let the tank cool till about 95 degrees, and then add our yeast. And it'll ferment that entire tank in about 50 hours' time. Then we'll pump it over into the still and run it in either one 14-hour day or 2 8-hour days. First gallon we pull off is referred to as the head's cut. That contains a lot of methanol and other chemicals that they just taste bad, they smell bad. You don't want them anywhere near your final product. So once I get past that, and it literally will change within an ounce, just about, between kind of an acetone taste and to more of a nice sweet rum taste. Once I've made that cut, then I'll just let it pretty much free flow until we hit about 10, 12 gallons of good alcohol that we pulled off. And once we start hitting, you know, 212 degrees, we've gotten to the point where we're starting to get our next phase product in there, which is the tails. And we'll make our finalized cut, pull off tails for a little bit, then break down the machine. After we've pulled off all the alcohol in both runs, we'll weigh it out and find out exactly how much we have. Then we'll add water until we cut that tank down to an 80-proof tank and drag it over to our bottling line. We use a single head bottle filler to fill each individual bottle, which is a vast improvement from using a funnel and a pitcher, which we use for the first six batches.
This is an amazing, personally handmade product. It's really quite impressive.
Well, we always want to know how good our product is compared to others. We like our product. We wouldn't make it if we didn't. We wouldn't put our name on the bottle if we didn't like it. But you really only know if you're compared to others, either in some cases to other product that's been on the market for a long time, have a big history, or other new neophyte distilleries like ourselves. We put our white rum into an international competition last June and got our results in July, and it was a 92 on a school scale of 70 to 100, and it was a gold medal. And when I went to the website to look at other competitive products to see what ratings and medals they received, and there's a three-year history on the site, we are the highest-rated American-made product they've ever tasted.
Congratulations. Well, I would say that's hitting it out the ballpark on the very first try.
It was. The other products above us are all from the islands, including Havana Club from Cuba, and then five others from other Caribbean islands, all of which have been in business for hundreds of years, all of which I've had personally. I enjoy their rums. I made a rum that is relative to theirs. So we were proud of that. This year, in 2016, the company in Chicago tasted rums not in June, but they changed it to March. And it just so happens we had the gold rum was ready to go. We sent them a bottle in March. They tasted it in March, got our results in April. This time again, congratulations, you have a 93, you have a gold medal. So two products, two tastings, two gold medals.
Well, I have learned so much from the two of you today. And congratulations on your incredible and rapid success. And here's to the super growth that I know is coming for you next.
Well, thanks for coming to visit us. We're glad to have you and anybody else who wants to come tour.
Doug and Jean-Luc Charbonneau of Charbonneau Distillery. What exactly is tomato aspic? And how do they make this historic favorite in Natchez? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and by French Market Coffee. Every premium blend of French Market Coffee contains a richness that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Made from the finest beans, slow roasted in small batches, only one coffee captures the bold flavor of our one-of-a-kind city. French Market Coffee. New Orleans, bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What exactly is tomato aspic, and how do they make this historic favorite in Natchez? The cold jellied appetizer, tomato aspic, is as much of a fixture on southern tables as sweet iced tea. But just the sight of this gelatinous savory is sure to strike terror into the hearts of those unfamiliar with the delicacy. From the time of the Middle Ages, cooks knew how to use jellied stocks to craft cold dishes, but the birth of tomato aspic, or at least its rampant popularity, seems to date back to post-World War II America. Although most of those jellied concoctions from the time of Ozzie and Harriet seem to have fallen by the wayside, tomato aspic is alive and well in Natchez, Mississippi. It's very easy to make. Just dissolve some Knox gelatin and add tomato juice, Worcestershire, some finely chopped onion and celery, and of course, some hot sauce. Pour the aspic into a mold and let it set in the refrigerator for several hours. When ready to serve, run a knife around the edge and dip the mold in hot water for just a few seconds. It can then be easily inverted onto a plate for serving. In Natchez, they garnish their aspic with a dollop of fresh mayonnaise and a sprig of parsley. For a copy of this recipe, visit our Louisiana Eats website at itsneworleans.com and wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and tomato aspic is real. Mississippi Eats.
Hey, Louisiana woman.
Mississippi man.
We get together every time we can. And Mississippi River can't keep us apart. There's too much love in this Mississippi heart.
Too much love in this Louisiana heart.
I'm Lisa Miller, and I own Natchez Brewing Company.
Patrick Miller, I am the chief volunteer.
Continuing our trip through Natchez, the Louisiana Eats crew paid a visit to a local brewery located in the heart of the city's downtown, run by husband and wife team, Lisa and Patrick Miller. There we had a great tour, tasted some delicious beer, and learned how craft brewing had become their passion.
Well, I lived in Asheville, North Carolina, which is part of the Great Smoky Mountains area, Appalachia, and Asheville is a big craft beer town. We lived there together, and we got really connected with craft beer, enjoyed it. And then when we moved back to Natchez in 2012, we really missed what we had there. Mississippi only had one brewery at the time, so we decided we should open up our own to bring our passion to the South.
What did it take to get this business started?
Money. I mean, it's craft beer is so new in Mississippi, so new in the South for the most part, that a lot of the banks don't or did not really understand the business. Investors really didn't understand the business. So we really had to, do it as cheap as possible. So currently we are the smallest brewery in the state of Mississippi and have grown the business, grown our demand from there. And at that point now, I mean, we've proven what we can do. We've proven our brand, and we are expanding to a new location, a much bigger brewery operation.
So what sort of beers are you brewing?
We have two flagship beers, so two year-round beers. One is Bluff City Blonde, which was our first, and it's a very, we consider our gateway beer. And it comes down to what folks here, they drink very light beers, very easy drinking. It's hot, it's Mississippi. So it really met that flavor profile. We do a German alt beer, which is an amber, very light body with some good dark malt flavors in it. And then we do two seasonals every quarter, and there's some special beers from there.
What's the reaction been in Natchez? Tell me how you perceive the scene.
So I can tell you how it started. I mean, we weren't really sure how it would be perceived. A lot of folks said, I guess the old guard would kind of buck against, a production brewery here in town. But it was totally opposite. We can't keep up with production now, keep up with demand. Here in Natchez, it's been so well perceived.
And when we started, before we actually got up and running, we would make small batch amounts of our beer and do like events around town to get interest and get people to taste the product and get behind us. And we've had so much support. Everyone's really been just wonderful.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks, especially around here, have a sense of pride knowing that the town has one of 14 breweries in the state. They have a local product made here that's distributed throughout the state for other people to try. And this is a beer drinking town.
And the tourism factor, too. Yeah. We get so many people that come off the boats, and they're always looking for something local. A lot of our friends that are in the restaurants and bars that work there say the first thing they ask is, what can we drink that's local? And first thing they offer them is the Bluff City Blonde, and normally goes down pretty well.
Someone has to start something somewhere for change, yeah. Right? I mean, so we're at the beginning of what will be change for the state when it comes to beer. Natchez should be a part of that change. So, it's just a natural city for it.
So this is where all the action happens.
Well, this is our brew house. This is essentially our brew kitchen. I like to call it a kitchen because we have three big pots. We have heat, we have water, we have some ingredients. We combine it and we cook. We make something. We make wort, W-O-R-T, sugar water. And that's going to be the base of our beer. The process up here takes roughly 4 to 5 hours during our day. Fairly short, not a lot to it. A lot of it's about temperature and timing. And then we transfer that wort from here downstairs to our cellar. We transfer it down here and we'll add it to one of these tanks here, and then that's where we add yeast and fermentation begins. It'll sit in one of these tanks for on average 2 weeks. At that point, we will transfer what is uncarbonated flat beer from the fermentation tank to this tank here. This is called a Brite tank, B-R-I-T-E, and this is where we carbonate. So yesterday we transferred a beer into here, we carbonated it, and today I'm coming in and start filling kegs. And then I'll clean it today and get it ready for tomorrow's brew.
Give me some examples of your seasonal beers.
So right now we have our Southern Grace, which is a German Berliner Weiss, a wheat sour beer. It is tart with hints of lemon. And we also have Old Rowdy Rooster, or The Rooster, which is a double IPA. It's going to be what folks like to call very hoppy. So it's going to be bitter, a lot of hop aroma, hop flavor, and it's a little bit higher in alcohol. That's for the summer. In the winter, we'll put out our black IPA, which we call Delta Shadow, which is more roastier IPA, a lot of roastier, darker malts, as well as our Pecan Coffee Porter. And for that beer, it's much more natural, so we teamed up with Steampunk Coffee Roasters, and we used their coffee in it. It's actually one of our, I guess, favorite beers that we put out that folks really like. And then we do like limited release stuff. For Natchez Tricentennial, we're doing a Belgian Triple, which is very, very light color-wise. Has a lot of some slight fruity flavors in it, but I personally think it drinks like white wine. It comes in a little at 9% alcohol, and that's for the 300 Tricentennial celebration for Natchez.
Where do you come with the names of your beers?
Well, that's probably the most difficult part for us, because I come up with great names, and she doesn't like them.
That's not fair.
I'm joking. No, we'll start throwing names out. We try to pick stuff that it's very Southern or very Natchez, or things that you know people can in the South can relate to, and we go from there. We'll make a list and we'll try to match names with styles of beer or the color or something like that.
Or like I'm a children.
It is. Yeah. It really is. I'm a big fan of Oh Brother Where Art Thou, the movie, and I love trying to pull names or phrases from that for names of beer. I don't know why. It's my
hilarious
thing. One of our local friends just happened to come in and was talking to us, and a couple buildings down, there used to be a radio station, and Uncle Neville was the DJ. Back, this was, I think, the 70s, 60s, 70s, something like that. And you tell the rest of the story, because I'll mess up the name of the song.
Well, apparently one night or one afternoon, he went a little bit off on one and locked himself in the radio station and played What's New Pussycat by Tom Jones for 24 hours straight. Until someone can happen in
yeah. Natchez?
I know.
We're like, that's perfect. Uncle Neville the Devil Uncle shall Neville be the Red IPA.
It's a Red IPA.
Lisa and Patrick Miller of Natchez Brewing Company.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we'll learn how one cup of coffee from San Francisco made Jeffrey Meeker of French Truck Coffee leave a career in fine dining for the job of coffee purveyor.
I tasted it, and it was better than any coffee I'd ever had in my life, and I had no idea why coffee could taste this much better than it had ever tasted in all these nice restaurants.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, by Tableau, Dickie Brennan's latest restaurant serving local Creole cuisine with a view of Jackson Square, and by Toujac's Restaurant, home of America's oldest stand-up bar, now celebrating 160 years on Decatur Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris.
come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eat studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.